This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Syngenta, delivering better food for a better world through outstanding crop solutions.
If today was a typical March 30th, the markets would have basically ground to a halt in anticipation of tomorrow's quarterly grain stocks and prospective plantings reports. Instead, the reports are kind of flying under the radar right now, which means, yeah, you guessed it, the reports will probably be big-time market movers for the grains.
Live from an appropriate distance via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we chat with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research. And in the fourth segment, Kerry Artek launches his weekly Artek Attack. And right after the news, Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lurie.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much. Here we go, man. Today's second hour of AgriTalk. If you did not get a chance to hear the first hour of AgriTalk this morning, I would highly recommend that you go back and take a listen. Highly recommend that. It was really cool. Really cool. We kind of got a pep talk from Jim Morris, who is the rookie. I mean, you guys know the movie, right? The Rookie. Dennis Quaid played Jim Morris in the movie The Rookie. Well, we had the real Jim Morris on this morning.
Yeah.
Talking about
the actual
struggles.
Jim Morris.
Talking about some of the struggles that he's gone through, how he leans on people to help him be the best that he can be. Talks about his new book a little bit. It was a really cool conversation with a guy that has motivated a lot of people over the years. 2002 is when the movie The Rookie was released. 2002.
Has it been that long ago?
Yes.
Wow.
I know. It doesn't hardly seem possible, but that's what all the prep work says. So yeah. So you got to get out there and listen to that conversation. We also had a great conversation with John Doggett from NC. From the National Corn Growers Association, NCGA. The markets today, corn was under pressure, soybeans mixed, wheat, I'm just going to call it mixed, mostly firm, live cattle and feeder cattle steady to lower for the most part. But this hog market has just, it can't get out of its way, Davis.
Yes. Yep.
It is really, really in a funk right now and trying to figure out how to stop the selling pressure that is happening in that market. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tough.
And we need
tough
to stop
go.
It now.
Yes, we do. Yeah. Yes, yeah. We do. All right, let's get to it. What was moving things around?
Sure thing, Chip. Well, wheat futures opened nearly steady, softened in overnight trade, but did come back to close with slight gains in most contracts. Domestic demand from consumers stockpiling bread and flour is helping to support prices. More supportive is some importing countries deciding to stockpile some just-in-case supplies. Yeah. Most supportive are exporting countries deciding to restrict exports to prevent food price inflation. Export inspections of U.S. wheat in the week ended March 26 totaled nearly 364,000 metric tons. July hard red winter wheat was 1¼ cents higher, 492¾. July soft red firmed a penny to 558¼. July spring wheat fell a half cent to 545. Chip.
Yeah, especially when one of the countries that is looking at restricting the exports of their milling quality wheat is the biggest wheat exporter in the world. And so when we've got Russia doing that, it should turn into some support for U.S. wheat prices.
Corn export inspections in the week ended March 26 totaled nearly 1.27 million metric tons, but the solid shipment pace failed to provide support for corn prices. Domestic corn consumption is being challenged by slumping liquid fuel demand as the country practices social distancing, which means working from home, no school, and canceled vacations. With gas prices in retreat, ethanol consumption is also draining away. The Renewable Fuels Association estimates as much as 19% of U.S. ethanol capacity has now been idled. May corn futures 4¾ cents lower, 341¼. July corn was down 4¼ to 347½. December corn closed at 359¾, down 4½ cents on the day today, Chip.
Yeah, if 19-20% of the ethanol industry has been idled right now, just wait until we get the storage filled up, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen sooner than any of us want in this ethanol market.
Well, export inspections of soybeans in the week ended March 26 totaled nearly 414,000 metric tons, falling well short of trade expectations. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 285,000 metric tons of U.S. beans for delivery to Mexico in the next marketing year. Yeah. While the demand from Mexico is welcome, traders are looking for signs that tight bean and meal supplies in China will spur additional purchases of U.S. beans in the near term. May bean futures were 0.75 cents higher, 882 and a quarter. July beans up 1 1/4, 886 and a quarter. November bean futures closed at 874 and a half, down 2 1/4 cents today.
Yeah, it's no good when your biggest, most reliable buyer of pork, corn, and apparently soybeans is knocking on our door looking for supplies every, every week. Mexico's become such an impressive buyer of our products. We can't, that's not good enough, Davis. We got to have China back in here to buy in beans.
Well, let's hit the livestock side. Expectations of heavy downside pressure on boxed beef values this week limited buying interest in live cattle futures. Choice boxes were $1.70 lower today, but still remain above $2.50, which should help to support cash cattle bids. April live cattle futures were $1.75 lower, 99.20. August cattle firmed 17.5 cents to 90.62.5. April feeders were down 55 cents to 120.05. And finally, on the snout side, fears that weeks, maybe months of pork demand has been pulled forward has erased buying interest from lean hog futures. The market is in a free-for-all, dropping daily trading limits for three consecutive sessions. April lean hogs down $4.50, $53.95. July off $3.72.50, $63.07.50. Chip?
Good grief. All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Jack Scoville, Price Futures Group. How you doing today, Jack?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Still sheltering in place and doing whatever I can to stay coronavirus free.
Yeah, attaboy. That's doing your part right there, sir. What do you make? I mean, it seems like every time we get a bit of good news in this corn market through some export demand, we beat it back down with the ethanol news. And it's maybe a half step forward and two steps back now for this corn trade.
Well, the corn, the ethanol demand for corn is just a phenomenal part of the corn demand, and to lose all that because of the trade war with the Russians and the Saudis is really just devastating news, and that's really what's gotten into the corn. You know, even some better export demand doesn't really seem to help, as you note, and even though it's all positive, all good, with the loss of ethanol demand, we still are looking at potential for increased ending stocks, and that's been the big problem for the corn market.
Yep. So when you take a look at how this how the grains are trading in general, Jack, what makes you most optimistic? What makes you most concerned?
Well, the corn market obviously is the one that's most concerning. Okay. The wheat and the rice market have been just on fire. And probably can keep on going. There's just a lot of food demand out there. Consumers stocking up on staple goods like flour, like rice, and it's been making its way through the futures market as well. So that's probably where the best demand is, and the best hope is for better stuff. The beans kind of caught. Yep. It really depends on exactly the logistic problems down in South America.
Yep, got it. All right, Jack, take care of yourself, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great.
All right, that's Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. You know, there's even hoarding of flour taking place. It's flying off the shelves. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know that a lot of the consumers out there even knew that bread was made out of flour.
2019 marks 40 years of Syngenta and its legacy company's work in seed treatment research and innovation. Ross Weichel, head of Syngenta Seed Care in North America, says a commitment to a robust pipeline is key to success for their customers. Ross joins us now. Hey, Ross. Well, last week we talked about Syngenta's commitment to new products, but what else does Syngenta offer in the way of seed care?
As the number one seed treatment provider in the world, we understand that having great products is only part of a winning equation. We also need to offer the best customer service when it comes to accurately using and stewarding those treatments in the field. As a result, we have dedicated seed care sales and technical support teams who work directly with their resellers and local markets to make sure they can help growers extract the greatest value from our products.
Thanks, Ross. For more stories from Syngenta, head over to www.syngentathrive.com.
This just in from the front lines of the fight against tough weeds in soybean fields. Growers have taken the next step with the ultimate secret weapon. Fierce brand herbicides from Valent USA. These pre-emergence herbicides protect soybean fields with multiple effective modes of action, residual control that lasts up to 8 weeks, and fierce resistance management to help you win the battle against resistant weeds and the war. Ask your retailer or visit Valent.com/fierce to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Attention oxygen users. Are you on oxygen therapy and still using tanks? Life is hard enough struggling to breathe. Don't waste your breath on dealing with bulky, dangerous tanks.
Call 800-513-4698 now.
And try the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator risk-free for 30 days. Tanks are a hassle. They hamper mobility and are difficult to transport, not to mention risky. The Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator is compact and makes its own oxygen, making your life easier. If you call right now, we'll send you a free information kit that outlines all the benefits. Plus, you can get a 30-day risk-free trial to see for yourself. But don't wait. This exclusive radio offer won't last. Call for your free information kit on the Inogen 1 G4 Oxygen Concentrator. Ditch the hassles of tanks and experience the freedom of living a mobile life again.
Call 800-513-4698. That's 800-513-4698. 800-513-4698.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
AgriTalk. You can also tweet at us, hashtag AgriTalk. That way I'll be sure to see it. Thank you so much for joining us for today's second hour of the show. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Hello.
Corn was lower. Beans were mixed. Meal was mixed. Bean oil was basically unchanged. Wheat, I'm going to call wheat mix. Same thing for live cattle. Feeder cattle slightly lower, and lean hogs trashed again. Trashed again. Yeah, no fun. No fun right there. All right, we got big reports coming our way tomorrow for the grain markets. We got the quarterly grain stocks report. We've got the prospective plantings report. Last week, we had the hogs and pigs report, which isn't doing the market any favors right now. I thought it was a little more neutral than what it is being given for a read now. But nonetheless, boy, I tell you what, with the way that it is under pressure, this hog market, we need to find something to stem the tide of selling that is taking place in that market. All right, so let's get ready for tomorrow's reports. We got Jerry Goodell, Midland Research. How you doing, Jerry?
Always good to be.
Good
to be with you, as always.
Good, good, good. So how's things there in Chicago?
Sheltering in place and that type of thing. Actually, I've been working at home here for about 6 months already, and so it's not a tremendous difference other than having run out the grocery store and trying to fend off all the other people buying out the bread and the toilet paper.
Yeah, I tell you what, we are getting we're getting perilously close to running out of the toilet paper, and it's not encouraging. I'm seeing no encouraging signs of being able to restock our supplies here, Jerry.
I totally understand, because in the last 2 weeks, every time I look at a grocery store, there's nothing in the grocery store. Yeah. I don't know. It must be all in northern Wisconsin, yet still being made.
That's right. Okay. So I said it at the start of the show, Jerry. Normally on a March 30th, ahead of a March 31 prospective plantings report and the quarterly grain stocks report, we might have seen the grain markets kind of grind to a halt in anticipation. This time, because of all the noise coming into the markets from the outside, it feels like they're flying under the radar right now, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. The grain stocks reports always have a hard time competing with prospective plantings, and that, interestingly enough, is I think you're right. The corn stock number, average estimates, pretty well close to what mine is, which means that always makes you nervous, seeing that I tend to try to be on one end or the other on that one. And soybeans, actually, I'm on the low end of that range out there at 21.70 versus 22.40, so that's 70 million bushels.
Yep.
From there, from the standpoint, biggest problem is we look at last year's sets of numbers here on the residuals, which is kind of the balancing act between going through the year. Typically you start out with a big residual because you got everything moving through the year on exports. People are still doing some harvesting, things like that, and then it stair steps down all through the year. Well, after they made some revisions in last year's crop sizes and a bunch of other stuff, we're at 90 million kind of all the way through the year. But that doesn't make a lot of sense, because we're still going to get some seed beans out of people's hands, and we need that residual to come up a little bit from there, from that standpoint. So, from that, I'm not looking for a huge increase of 20 to 30 million versus the 76 billion actually that they started with last fall. And so that's a number that could be interesting from there. It might also indicate some things on the crop size out there too. If that number comes in towards my end of it, I have to say that suggests that another year of missing the USDA's yield number when it gets to September. We'll find that out later, though.
Yep. So what does that tell you about the end of the marketing year, Jerry, as far as your carryover for beans goes?
Well, the biggest thing in that is that I think we're going to stay with our crushes right there.
Okay.
It's been super, that kind of stuff. And now we've had issues about Argentina having some issues of getting their exports out, and because they can't get the beans in, or they can't get them shipped or whatever. And then Brazil, maybe not. But even then, I think that the crush is going to stay pretty strong, because we got plenty of hogs.
Yep.
From there, and chickens, and the people that really wanted this protein. So I'd sense that it might go up a little bit, because people are still gun-shy about this exports on beans.
Jerry, if I can, I want to throw one more thing out to you as far as the crush goes. The market's going to be dying for DDGs here pretty soon, and they may have to spike some more meal into their rations.
Very good idea. That's part of the next story when you get over to the corn side. We definitely have issues going over there in the ethanol industry, there's no doubt. But that all being said, I think that's really strong. But I think if somebody took 25 million out of exports, would somebody cry and say that's wrong? No, they won't. But in reality, we're still at very good level on soybean carryover stock. That's part of the story for next year when we get into the plannings for next year.
Okay.
Let's go back to the corn, though. The corn is a very interesting one, of course. We had, we appreciate Lance making sure our export, our whole arrangement on our feed usage looks so perfect as it does now. But at the same time, the issues of the huge number we had last fall. Now, part of that's because the U.S. Feed industry went out and bought a lot of stuff and took it in the fall and got it in their possession. Now, that means that they would traditionally be a pretty good limited buyer this winter. from the point of view, I bought so much, I'm using invert. Last year, we didn't buy a lot in the fall, and we didn't buy a lot in the wintertime because it was a polar vortex. So I'm kind of looking for that number to be kind of similar to that, because if you go back to 2 or 3 years before that, we were talking 200 to 300 million more corn used in the winter quarter. So that's an interesting scenario, and that's where I think that the interesting factor could come through. And if we do get a number around that 8.1, it could also indicate that we still have issues about the crop size. We're hopefully going to get the rest of this crop size figured out in the April report. We haven't heard that officially from them yet, but I bet it's coming.
Okay. All right. So that's kind of the domestic side and a little bit on the supply side there. The exports, can we hold them together?
That is a million-dollar question at this point. Yeah. I think there should be. We're starting to see, without the Brazilians in here shipping stuff, we've had some excellent numbers over the last month to 6 weeks, and they're trying to stay strong. The biggest problem right now is that we need some people in the world to have faith in the quality of our crop, and that's hard to do since we all know that this is not 60-pound corn out here. This is 52 and a lot of stuff, and that's the other side of this coin. And then, of course, we got our dollar sky high, and so that's been tough. I'd say that right now the corn side is going to be slipping. And then this whole ethanol issue, you said 19%, I think, from some official. Yep. I was using some ideas about using, for the month of April, going down between 20 and 25% and reduction of output. And that means less corn, of course. But at the same time, that means that the inventory we have out here is at 24 million gallons. We traditionally do about, let's do a quick figure of 1 million gallons, 1 million barrels a day. And that's 24 billion barrels. Like, you got to keep barrels in that world.
Yep.
And if you don't figure it back and forth on this whole thing, if you're going to lose 20%, then you're going to have our gasoline demand's got to be at least 10 down. So I saw 5 weeks we could be down from their 24, we could be down closer to 15 or 16 million of inventory, because we're going to get the, it's going to keep moving out. But at the same time, 10% will not be there. So instead of 5 weeks, it's 10 weeks. You got between 8 and 10, 11 weeks before we go down to the point saying, God, we got to get this ethanol industry going. Otherwise, we're going to start stumbling, because this is an industry that depends on trains. It's not the pipeline here. It's got to keep moving back and forth and moves out of the. I know that the people in Iowa there were seeing all these plants go down, and your basis of went from, 10 under to 15 under to 40 under is no good. But at this point, I got to believe that there's some point where we're going to finally find this thing catch again, because we're going to need the 10%. That hasn't gone away.
Despite
what the EPA and this administration is not helping us. But at this point, that 10% is still there. So hopefully that's a fact.
Yep. That 10% is still there, and the need for octane is still there. They still have got to have octane in the reformulated gasoline. That's where our, quite frankly, that's where the demand is coming from for the ethanol right now. All right, we are talking with Jerry Goodell. Jerry is with Midland Research. 2.092 billion bushels is Jerry's 2019-20 corn carryover estimate. And on the soybean side of things, he's looking for 450 million bushels.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued, so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers first thing today. Trump extends social distancing guidelines until the end of April. The White House vows to start sending emergency loans to small businesses this week. Guys, I just got to say, if you've got a workforce, check out the loans available through the Small Business Administration. Understand if you are eligible, understand the rules, and understand how they work. They could be business-saving loans. The week ahead, on Friday, the employment report for March is expected to show the string of jobs growth ended at 113 consecutive months. Russia's economic ministry backs proposal to cap grain exports. Ukraine's grain exports dramatically slowed last week, and bears have momentum in the hog market. That's today's Pro Farmer Headline News.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Zach Johnson, a row crop farmer in Minnesota.
And I'm Mitchell Hora, a farmer in Iowa.
Agriculture has to feed a growing population, and many people want us to pull that off without messing up the environment. So how do we do that?
We're trying to figure that out on our podcast, Fieldwork. Check us out on the AgriTalk app and learn more at fieldworktalk.org.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Y'all ready for this?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. I've got Davis Michelson with me, and we're having a conversation, conversation with Jerry Goodell from Midland Research. Davis, if you would, go ahead and recap how the market's closed.
Well, Chip, July hard red winter wheat was 1 1/4 cent higher, 492 3/4. July soft red firmed a penny to 558 1/4. May corn futures were 4 3/4 cents lower, 341 1/4. December corn closed at 359 3/4. That's down 4.5 cents today. May soybean futures were 0.75 cents higher, 882 1/4. Novi bean futures closed at 874 1/2, down 2 1/4. On the livestock side, April live cattle futures $1.75 lower, 99.20. April feeders down 55 cents, 120.05. And April lean hogs down $4.50 today, 53.95. There's your quick market recap. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's get Jerry Goodell back in here. Jerry, let's take a look now at what to expect on the planting sides of things. We went through the grain stock, some things that are going to be influencing where we end up there, where you think we might end up at the end of the 2019-20 marketing year. Obviously, the big variable right now that everybody's wondering about for the 2020-21 marketing sheet is that planted acreage number, Jerry. Where do you land on corn and soybeans?
Well, I think the interesting thing is the trade, and rightly so, well, all the different private estimates that were put out here in the latter part of February and on through even last week, and that which are based off of surveys in the first 5 to 10 days of March, all indicated something higher than the USDA's 94 million, and the average trade guesstimate came in at 93.3. I don't know that I had a number actually that's a 93.4 is my expectations from the USDA.
Isn't the average trade guess 94.3? I think it isn't it, Jerry?
I said my number. My number was 93.4.
Okay, I'm sorry.
My estimate in that estimate. But I really think we're going to potentially even go lower than this because I think there's so many people have always seemed to judge their corn and soybean prices by what they go to the elevator right now at. And this basis level was so good on corn because of ethanol. And that, and beans were no good because the Chinese weren't buying and all that kind of stuff. But if you look at what's happened in the last 3 weeks, corn's went down into the sewer, hasn't been able to bounce. Yep. Beans have not been good, but they bounced, and there's more optimism there. Protein around the world still is protein, and if China is going to be it all in this market, they got to buy beans in a big way. So I got to believe that the key to this thing is, as we go forward, corn's going to keep ratcheting down because we do not need 94, 95 million acres of corn.
Right.
I don't care if it's 172 or 178. We don't need that many acres of corn from that standpoint. And also, if you think about the rotation situation and the soils and the stuff sitting in this prevent plantings and all the cost to get that up and going, let's be a little more realistic about what money the banker is going to give you to put this ground back in here.
Yep.
I think there's some key features in this thing. Now, do I think we're going to 90 million on beans? No. But at the same time, I don't think that we're going to stay at 84 or something like that. I'm looking for 86, you know, but we can handle it. That's the thing is interesting. The demand side of this thing, you kind of remember what the industry, excuse me, the outlook said. They had 330. For the ag outlook number. I don't think that's right either. I think we won't have as much exports maybe. But in general, there's room on the bean side. Let's get on that side of the ledger here.
Right. Right. Okay, so you're thinking 86 on beans, 93 on corn, 179 combined. This is kind of splitting hairs, but you feel heavy on the combined total there to me, Jerry. Just, you know, maybe a couple million heavy.
Not impossible. I'm kind of end up trying to figure out on this number where we started on this thing. The whole time in here, people have kind of think that we're going to end up going right back to 2 years ago's total acres. I don't think we're going to do that either.
Yeah.
My number is 251 against 253 or plus.
Okay.
So it's 2.5 million less. And that because of what's happened in Nebraska, where there's eroded ground. North Dakota is still a sponge. You know, it's going to be forever to get that stuff figured out. Places in Wisconsin, Michigan, those kind of ground out there is not going to be quickly back into row crop production. Yes, Woodbury County in central Illinois is going to get all those acres planted, but I wouldn't count on it every place else. So that's the other issue you got to look at here. And I think that we're going to find a little bit more spring wheat, little durum, little oats, little barley, that kind of stuff from there. And that'll eat away a little bit. And the possibility of – I'd love to see us at 92.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Hey, you know, you said that we can handle it on the soybean side because of the demand. Are you thinking that your carryover trend is basically steady into the 2021 marketing year?
It is. I'm not sure that if you just pointed out on the crush side, that moves up another 25 or 30. Exports hang in here at the latter part of the stage, and that is important. We do need to find the Chinese or somebody buying some into this crop. We do need some buyers in here in the old crop. That could compensate for it, so we'd be at 425 again. If we can get to 400, a little bit under, put that out there in front of us for beginning stock, then turn around, and 50 bushel yield is a solid yield we'll use, and that, and a minor increase in crush for next year. The big key will end up being the Chinese have to be a buyer on the 2020-21 crop in a big way.
Right.
And they should be. if they come in the fall like they should be and continue on next year. And maybe we get some bad luck in Brazil.
Yeah. Well, bad luck or good luck, it depends on your perspective there. So on the corn side of things, then, your carryover trends, you're already up there around 2.1, but even at 93, you're probably looking at, well, I don't know. What are you throwing on there for an average yield, for a trend line yield?
Well, I'm using 176.5, and I think that is basically the highest we've ever had in the last 3 years. USDA's love was putting on 2 bushels on every year, and we're 178.5. I don't know.
Well, Jerry,
that's really optimistic.
It's a record yield until proven otherwise anymore, Jer.
Well, at this point, we started at 176 3 years ago. We didn't get it 2 years ago. Last year, we sure as hell didn't give it. We might even get less than 168 and then turn around. And now we're going to go from 166 or 168 all the way back to 178.5 because, glory be, U.S. GMOs are fantastic. And that, to me, is way too optimistic. Now, does that make any difference? No, they're going to still use it. We know it, and I know it, and that. But eventually, we're going to get this idea that corn's not going to 200 bushels in the next year or two.
Okay, but here we sit with your conservative 176.5.
Yeah, my conservative is right. Exactly.
And your 93 million planted, that's probably, with the demand outlook for the year ahead, that's probably not enough to turn your carryover down, is it?
No. You see my numbers. I sent them to you anyway. But the interesting thing about this is, what is feed use going to do? We kind of feel like we're going to have feed the hogs and chickens around. Hopefully the Chinese buy any more pork and that. Ethanol hopefully can stabilize in here and get a minor bounce back. The USDA was using 5.45 for next year. I still think that's it, or maybe a little 50 million more. The biggie's got to be corn exports. Their number of 2.1 definitely is needed in that. But even then, we're going to potentially get down to 2.4, 2.5 billion. That's the reason why that we really don't need any more acres here on corn in this situation. Even trying to be tight on our ideas about yield and also being generous on our demand numbers. So I hope producers out there think about this and not say, well, golly, I sure like to plant corn. Well, and the Chinese, they're never going to buy beans. Well, yes, they're going to buy beans, and the world's going to buy beans because we had a super small crop last year. And this is the reason why that we need to get this thing push that direction. Do I think we're going to be 90 million? No. But at the same time, we sure could use, 85, 86, maybe 6.5. Big deal.
Right. Okay. Well, here's the deal. In the last two afternoon shows, Jerry, we've now got a billion bushel spread between corn carryover projections from high to low. Dan Bossi was on Friday with a 3.5 for the 2020-21 marketing year. I didn't call him crazy, but it feels a little heavy to me.
Really? Well, I guess that's kind of what they've been. Right now, they want to sell the next nickel up in corn. But I appreciate Ag Resources. They do a tremendous job and that kind of stuff. Sometimes you got to let the market breathe a little bit to see what's out there. You just don't want to keep pounding it forever.
Excellent point, Jerry. Hey, man, you're always a good sport coming on in front of the USDA reports and helping us set the stage and set the expectations for our listeners on what to expect from these things. Not a lot of guys will do that, Jerry, but you step right up dang near every time. So we appreciate it, buddy.
Now, to me, you've got to think about what's going to come, and you got to also be prepared for what's going to be next. And that's the thing about this thing. Tomorrow, right after these planting numbers, everybody's going to say corn's going to be less and beans are going to be higher. So what does that mean? And that's the thing you need to think about before we see the numbers.
Good stuff, Jerry. Thank you, buddy. That is Jerry Goodell, Midland Research. Okay. It is time to get an update on what to expect and what the charts are telling us. We've got Kerry Artak from Artak Advisory coming up next, right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk!
AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
When weeds get tough, AmVac answers with the power of Impact brand herbicides, proven to control key grasses and tough, glyphosate-resistant broadleaf weeds. Impact is the standard in corn safety. Impact brand herbicides, tough on weeds, not on corn. Get more information at AmVac.com/impact. AmVac, Impact, and Impact ZR trademarks owned by AmVac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Always read and follow label instructions. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Are you over 50? Would you like to get up to 33% more income in retirement? Then call now for this free book, Annuity Do's and Don'ts for Baby Boomers, from a leading financial firm on maximizing your income in retirement. That's right, free. This free book reveals little-known truths about annuities in simple-to-understand terms that will help you make the right choices before buying an annuity. And it's free. As a bonus, we'll also throw in a free annuity rate report summarizing the rates and benefits from financially strong insurers.
Call 800-806-9013.
That's right, annuity do's and don'ts for baby boomers and annuity rate report, both absolutely free for calling today.
Call 800-806-9013. That's 800-806-9013.
Producers have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer. Increased income is possible using strategies suited to your goals and may require buying multiple annuities and holding them full term.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
And then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Davis, we got a nice day going in the Dow again in the equities, up about 600 points in the Dow.
All right.
Yeah, so NASDAQ is up 240. Good grief. I mean, it's kind of a big day. The S&P is up 78.5. Nice moves all the way across the board in the equities. So, yeah. All right. Let's bring in Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, get an update on what's going on in the world of technical analysis on the on a couple of these markets. Kerry, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Chip. Thanks for having me again.
You bet. You bet. Thank you for making the time for us again. Let's go ahead and get started with what's going on in corn, because this is kind of a ugly one.
It is. It is. It's following through on, you know, a longer term sell signal that played out a couple of weeks ago below 358.25, which is a 15-year channel bottom that up until last couple of weeks had held a series of longer term lows from 2016 onward. And so, you know, my longer term analysis in the broader corn market has shifted from stable to the likelihood for continued price erosion into summer trade and possibly into later year, with the longer term charts going back over 30 years suggesting a 221.5 as a full year downside objective. I don't know if we'll get there or not, but that's what the big picture is suggesting. But if, you know, May corn can close the week Friday back above 358.25, which is a long shot given today's 341.25 settlement. You know, that'd be considered a sign of strength as we continue into later April. May corn then likely to test 385 even within about 2 to 3 weeks, and 410 not out of the question by May contract expiration if we can close any week back above 358.25. But until then, we remain heavy. And so, you know, downside, which, you know, at this point is the path of least resistance, a secondary long-term sell signal would occur this week if on Friday we close below 327.25, and I then expect 296 even by the end of April. That 221.5 area then really not out of the question by the end of the year. On to May soybeans. We tested long-term support a few weeks ago at a channel bottom that is now at 838 even. And the longer-term weekly chart suggests that holding above 838 even May soybeans will keep 976 even long-term resistance in reach as we continue into summer trade. Near-term 885 even is a meaningful upside hurdle. It can contain weekly buying pressures, but if we can close Friday above 885 even, then I think that 976 even area is not out of the question, say, by the end of May, where the longer-term market, you know, the broader bean market can actually place an annual high. Now, downside this week, I don't see it happening, but if May beans close the week Friday below 838 even, then they actually become aligned with the broader corn market's longer-term weakness, and I then expect continued soybean price erosion into later spring. The next few months then expected to test 690 even, where the broader market can actually bottom out through the rest of the year. And finally, June live cattle. It's presently testing long-term support at 88.27. We dipped below it like we did a couple of weeks ago on an intra-week basis. This is an area that, you know, despite that recent slippage, can absorb broader live cattle selling into summer trade. I'm talking June contract. And so with continued weekly settlements at or above 88.27, we should reach up to 102.30, say, by the end of April, with 113.5 not out of the question as we continue into summer activity where the broader cattle market can actually place a summer high. Now, downside, if June live cattle settles the week Friday below 88.27, and because of the significance of this longer-term four-year channel bottom, I would really want to see a clear 1% violation of that threshold. So in other words, a weekly settlement Friday at or below 87.37 would indicate continued price erosion into later spring, 66.50, then consider the next realistic 2 to 3 month downside target. So closing below 87.37, $66.50 expected within several months, where the broader live cattle market can actually place an annual low. And I could add one little thing about the Dow here. I heard you talking before I got on.
Yep.
23,500 is our ceiling, really, through April. It's creeping up ever so gradually. It's a channel bottom we violated a few weeks ago. Still expecting 16,300 as a big picture target. We got down to 18,200 last week. So that's not a real, that's not a long shot, 16,300 over the next few weeks, where I think the broader Dow could actually place not only an annual, but even a decade long low. If we happen to close this week back above 23,500, that actually looks pretty favorable. I don't see the market screaming upward, but that 29,500 high that we placed in February would be in reach. That's a tough one. Normally, under this kind of volatile situation, I'd say 3 to 5 weeks. But I keep thinking about this global situation playing out. I think it would take probably 3 to 5 months to retest that 29,500 high.
Okay. All right. Good stuff, Kerry. Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate everything you do.
Thanks, Chip. Take care now.
All right. That is Kerry Artak. If you want a 2-week free trial of what Kerry has to offer, just go to Artak Advisory. That's ARTACadvisory.com, and Kerry will get you signed up. Davis, real quick, let's do the trade expectations for tomorrow's reports. On the prospective plantings reports, the average pre-report trade guess on corn acres, 94.328 million. On soybeans, 84.865 million. So we're looking at roughly 94.5 and just call it 85 million on soybeans. Those are some numbers that I feel like might be a little bit difficult to get to. On the all wheat number, 44.982 million. Winter wheat would make up 30.9 million of that. Other spring wheat, 12.63 million. And Durham, 1.512 million acres. For the prospective plantings report. Now, cotton on the acres for 2020, 12.7 million is the average pre-report trade guess. Finally, on the quarterly grain stocks report, March 1 corn stocks, 8.125 billion bushels, soybeans, 2.241 billion bushels in the average. Guess going into the quarterly grain stocks report for wheat stocks as of March 1, 1.432 billion bushels.
Okay.
All right. So there we go. We got the report coming out 11 o'clock Central Time, noon Eastern Time tomorrow. And that is, of course, if everything sticks to schedule, as we've been told that it will and that it should, at least for these reports. So looking forward to getting those numbers out of the way.
You bet. And we'll be doing the dissection tomorrow afternoon, right?
That's right.
On the report?
That's right.
Okay.
It will be you and me going over the numbers, and hopefully we'll have a little extra time to go over some other issues as well. All right, for Davis and for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, we've got Congressman Mike Conaway from Texas.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Thanks to Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. For more news on Syngenta and the trends driving the industry, head to syngentathrive.com.